Welcome to the OFX podcast. I'm Dave Claxton, and normally Bethany would be right beside me, but today she's not. She will be in for the interview in just a few seconds. Now, sometimes we get guests thrown at us that we're not expecting, and this is one of those times that was really awesome and really lucky that this gentleman reached out to us. He was the surprise of High Rocks Worlds. He was the third place finisher, Thiago Miguel Busa. All right, so we'll just jump into it. Today's guest is, and I'm going to do my best here, Thiago Miguel Busa.
Almost perfect.
I'll take that. That's better than usually absolute trash, which is amazing. So first off, we'll start out with this. I have no idea who you are. I mean, seriously, even though I did the commentary on the thing where like you got to the wall balls and like, who is this guy and where did he come from? Like, what's going on here? Like, it just blew us away. So I don't know, Beth, you want to dig into the past a little bit here before we get to the World Championship?
Yeah, sure. In terms of IROX, I did my event just last year in Hanover in Germany. So I flew over, I tried the best I could, and I qualified for the World Championship. In that event, I was a bit lost because I had no reference in terms of athletes and times, but I was fortunate enough to have Tobias running with me. So I did like second place overall, first in my age group. And so I qualified. Then the World Championship was postponed twice, and I ended up in Leipzig this past weekend. If in previous years, what I was doing, I did some Spartan races. I won some Spartan races here, not in Portugal because we don't have them, but I went to Madrid, to Barcelona. I won them. I did three European championships also in Spartan races with top 10 finishes. I did one World Championship in Lake Tahoe. I was like the, I believe, 21st overall. I did fourth European, so it was not bad. And prior to that, I had my past in terms of college. I did some cross country, but not at a national level. I did orienteering. I did some World Championships in orienteering when I was like 15, 16. I did some triathlons, but always in a not high level. And in past few years, also have done some trail runnings, and I did like fifth in the national championship in terms of short courses, 25, 30 kilometers. That's more or less my past as an endurance athlete.
That's actually very impressive. I feel like you've kind of flown under the radar here. Even to come 21st in Lake Tahoe, I feel like maybe we've just not paid close enough attention, because you have some very good finish. And to finish second to Tobias in your first and only High Rocks before this, Tobias is now the current world champion. So that's very impressive.
Thank you. And also, when we raced together, he beat me also by like a minute, like he did in the world championship. My difference was exactly the same to him.
What year did you go to Tahoe?
2016.
2016. Okay. So that was back before. I was just wondering if he was there the same year as you, Beth.
Yeah. That was before I started Spartan racing as well. Yeah.
All right. So you were doing Spartan racing and all that stuff and doing a bit of everything. And honestly, that seems like the model to make somebody good for High Rocks, or for is just a jack of all trades coming together for one thing. What got High Rocks under your radar?
Some OCR guys, especially the Americans like Hunter. I saw they were coming to this different event. I followed them on social media. I searched a little bit and found out that the concept and the IROX events were happening here in Europe, especially in Germany. So why not? And then I registered and went for it. That's usually what I do. Even in Spartan racing, I was like one of the first Portuguese guys to do it. I did it like for 2 years and then I jumped on to another sport. That's what I've been doing all my life.
So how is, and I'm just curious kind of about your training towards this, because a lot of what you're saying is a lot of running, triathlon, a lot of endurance, but High Rocks obviously takes a little more power than a lot of those.
Yeah.
What do you do for strength orientated?
To be completely honest, I'm a weak guy. I have like, I'll talk in kilograms, but I can try to speak
Canadian
also in pounds. Yeah, you understand, I know, but your audience probably won't. I have like 125 kilos back squats. That's not even twice my body weight. I'm small. I'm like 1 meter and 72 centimeters, 71 kilos. So I'm probably, or almost certainly, the smallest and the weakest guy in the room. But I do CrossFit. I own a CrossFit gym for more than 5 years now. I've done some competitions, but specifically as a master or in a team, because individually, in terms of elite, I don't have the strength to do it. But CrossFit is most of my training. Revolves around CrossFit. I train with my partners from the gym, with my teammates, and I try to do everything that is endurance as an extra, and I do it by myself or I do it in my job, because I'm a special police major, like the rank above the captain. So I'm commanding a special unit, and we have 1 hour, 2 hours a day to do our training. So we do some tactical training, but we also do some calisthenics, some kind of endurance training also.
So all that would be huge into that muscular endurance, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I try to mix things up. Even when I'm doing the CrossFit Metcons, I try to incorporate some of the IROX movements. I try to turn them harder. I do wall balls with 12 kilos. Sometimes when I do rowing, I try to alternate rowing with running, assault bike with running. I have my partners to run with me, but most of them don't have my times in terms and my pacing. So what I do is, so that I can have company in training, I adapt myself. So if they have like 800 meters intervals, I do it with them. But in the rest interval, they rest like 2 minutes, I rest one. And in the other minute, I do like 15 or 20 calories assault bike. I tire myself and then I go and run with them and try to pace them out. So that's, I try to find my own motivation in training with my teammates.
Honestly, Beth, this seems like about the exact same style that you would have to train for the HYROX as well. I mean, like, you guys are kind of like a kindred spirit almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that you, when you said, I'm probably the smallest, weakest guy in the field, because that's how I felt when I did HYROX. But it's kind of cool because it's interesting when you step onto a start line and you're very unassuming and people, there's no expectations of you. So I think some of the pressure is also lifted. So I don't know if you felt that way going into the HYROX World Championships, because people didn't really know who you were or they had no expectations of you really.
Yeah, for sure. That's something that I'm used to. Even when I did some Spartan races, no one knows a guy from Portugal. Even if I do good scores before, I went to Lake Tahoe and I already had won Madrid and Barcelona, that probably were the biggest competitions in Europe with 12,000 person. But in the United States, no one knows us. In Germany, no one knows me. So that kind of shakes off the pressure out of me. My pressure is the one that I get to myself. I have my own goals. Some of the goals I share, some of the goals I don't share, but I know what I'm capable of. And I think that's most of the athletes, especially in hybrids and some OCR competitions, don't study the other competitors. So we were only 16, 18 elite athletes. I had references from all of them, all. And I know that most of them only had references from the top six, top five, the Americans from two or two German guys, the Germans from two or three American guys. So yes, I was the underdog. No one knew me. And that's kind of something that was playing in my favor.
And I mean, you worked it that way too. Like, your Instagram is a private account. There's not a lot of, you know, a lot of these guys are showing stuff. They're trying to, you know, sponsorship, doing all that thing. You're just intentionally flying under the radar.
It's not intentional, you know, that it's also because of my job, my family. I try not to be overexposed. I try to create a different Instagram account, more oriented to my training, but I don't have time to manage those accounts, because I also have the one for my gym. But people that have been following me, they know more or less what I do. Some parts of the training I try to share them with no problem. But I believe that the most important thing is to be specifically prepared for the event in terms of knowing what you're capable of, what you can do, and also knowing your fellow competitors, because it's very important to have some tactics intra the competition.
Okay, so going into this race then, did you know you could podium?
Nope. No, I'll be honest. I wanted to try a top 10 because, as you said, most of the other guys have quite... they are always posting things on social media. So for a few weeks, I followed Hunter, I followed Dylan, I followed David Magida. But I'll be honest, I know that most of the times things that are posted, I'm not saying that they aren't real, they are, but you have to put them in context. And so it's different if I see a guy doing 3 minutes kilometer in five K intervals, if he has been resting or if he has done nothing yet in that day. So I can't be overwhelmed by that score. I have most of the times I try to train in fatigue, tired. I also have a newborn with 6 years old. So it's 6 weeks old. So my last 5 weeks coming to the competition, the nights that I slept the most were like 4.5 hours. So my training and my scores in training were not as good as I would like them to be, but I'm used to that. So I trusted myself and I thought I could do like a top 10. But as I was saying, I saw the running paces of Dylan Scott, David Magida, even from Hunter, from Tobias, and I never thought I could outrun them. Because in a regular competition, their times in a half marathon, 10K, are probably, all of them are better than mine. And I knew that I'm weaker on the workout station. So I had to do like a very good management, effort management in terms of tactics also to accelerate when I knew I could and to ease off in specifically in 2 or 3 times, specific times in the competition so that I could gain some time back.
So when you get on the start line, you're with all these giant monsters and you're thinking to yourself, and actually this is where I think what you're talking about would be a real value is there's not pressure on you. And at the same time, you're like, yeah, these guys are larger than life almost, but it doesn't matter because I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah, it was more or less like that. I knew that when arriving to the sleds, I was going to lose time. We have tested the sleds the night before. I knew they were lighter. Many people have been talking, and I see in a lot of podcasts or comments from especially from the Americans that the sleds were much lighter here in Europe. It's not in Europe. It was in this event because my times in Hanover compared with this, I took like 50% of my time on the sled. I did 6 minutes and now I did 4. So 50%, I did more 50% on the first time. So I knew the sleds were lighter. I knew that the run was going to have a different impact. I knew that more biased athletes that were more biased to endurance and to body weight movements could have some advantage or less disadvantage. I knew that stronger athletes like Hunter would have pressure after the sleds. That was something that never happened before and that could completely change the course of the race as it did. I was interviewed by IROX World and the night before, and I told them this. I told them that I believe that the stronger runners like Roncevic, Tobias, like Magida could do really well. But my game plan was simple. I wanted to go like all out in the beginning so I can gain some advantage. All out, it's relative, obviously. In terms of the running, I did it above my threshold. On the ski erg, I'm a small guy. I knew that I was going to lose some time. I lost. I entered the ski erg in second or in first, and I left in sixth or seventh. But when I got to the sled, I was already in front of the race. And so I tried to do some damage control. And that's what I did. I lost some 30, 40 seconds, and then I got them back almost all the time on the race, on the run. And then on the sled pool, I lost again lots of time and left like in 10th, 11th place. And then I got to recover always on the runs. And I knew that my strongest workouts were the burpee broad jump and the lunges. That's something that's not usual for a weaker, smaller guy, but I know I'm good at that because I train that all the time. At this moment, I'm trying to beat the 1 hour record of most chest to ground burpees. So I'm used to do a lot of burpees all my life. I've done them. I knew also that on the carries, I'll lose some time. So I had to make up on the runs. And the runs, I suffered them from the beginning to the end. But I knew that I had to do that in order to be able to keep up with the front guys, or at least don't lose much time.
Now, in retrospect, what some of the other athletes were saying about you after was like, they did not notice you until those burpee broad jumps and the lunges. And that's all. They were just like, he was kind of there, And then when it got to the burpee broad jumps and the lunges, he just blasted those and all of a sudden was right out front with Tobias. And everybody was just kind of like, what the hell? Because they all seemed, and I think this comes down to, I've always believed HYROX is an event that if you can put your blinders on and run your own race, you're always going to do better rather than getting caught up with everyone else. And it seemed to me that in this particular race, the only two people that were really able to do that were you and Tobias, where you just went out and ran your own race. And that's why I think at the end, you had enough in the tank to really hit your strong points. And then that's where it was like, where did he come from to the point where we like, did he miss a lap? Like, did he maybe not do a length of the lunge? We're like, what's going on here? He just come out of nowhere. And now he's in second and pushing Tobias. And we were like blown away. So it was that the plan too, to like save a little bit and then just crush what you're good at? Or
yes. On the runs, I couldn't save anything. So I was always on my 98, 99%. In the first races, runs, I was above even my pace. So because I knew that on the sleds, I will need, it was necessary for me to do some strategic stops. I only did the first segments unbroken, and always on the next ones I stopped twice because I knew that it was really taxing for me on the legs because I'm not a strong guy. But what I've noticed is that even for the stronger guys, they stopped like once, like David McGee, they stopped on the second, third, and fourth just one time. And the stronger guys like Tobias, they didn't even make any break just on the end of each segment. But even doing that, they were tired on the run because I'm a very analytical guy when I'm running. And I can count every second when I see some athletes running in front of me on a corner, on a flag, on a screen. I see when he passes, I count time. And then when I pass, I see, okay, I'm 16 seconds behind him. And on the next lap, I know that I'm winning or losing like 2 or 3 seconds. And that's something that I like to do. It keeps my mind occupied. I'm thinking all the time and I'm having a real notion of my placement on the race, if I'm winning time or if I'm losing time. So my game plan was to rest a little bit on the sleds, to go all out, relative all out on the runs. And that would allow me to arrive to the burpee broad jumps in a good way, breathing calmly with my heart rate not that high, because I knew also that when I was prepared to do the farmer's carry, I was going also to lose some time. When I saw that the event had like 20 meters lanes and we had to do like 9 turnarounds, I decided immediately that I was going to stop on every turn, and I did. I dropped the kettlebells, turned back, picked them up every time, because it's really taxing for me to be in a kind of isometric position carrying the kettlebells. It's not the grip, it's not the legs, it's the lungs, the shoulders, the traps. Because when I left the kettlebell carry, it was the run where I noticed that I was in a completely different pace from the other guys. I had been running side by side with Magida, with Dylan, and we were like 2, 3 seconds, 5 seconds per kilometer difference. But on that run after the kettlebell carry, I'm probably like 20 seconds or something like that. It made a real difference.
Yeah, I noticed that on the kettlebell too. And I mentioned that on the broadcast, that because of the setup there, you might see guys set it down, spin, pick it back up, just because to keep hold of it and turn around really doesn't save a lot of time, and it's extra energy. So, I mean, I probably would have went with that same thing. I mean, I wouldn't have been nearly as fast, but, you know, I like the idea. So you ended up, you get to the wall balls, and I believe you were in second when you came into the wall balls.
Yes.
And then, unfortunately, you ran into Ronkovic, who decided he's just going to destroy them. Did you see him coming behind you? Like,
nope. No. No, you know, when I left, the lunges were my best workout. And when I was in the lunges, I was completely focused, because by that time I saw I can do like a top six or a top five. Because when I entered the lunges, I was in sixth. Mm-hmm. And my Portuguese and Spanish friends that were there, they were constantly yelling at me, saying that I was recovering and making ground for all of them. And at some point in the race, they told me how I was almost picking up Hunter. But when I arrived, they already had like 20 meters. So I thought they were just motivating me with some unrealistic indications. But I thought, I have to trust them. I have nothing to lose. So I'll believe that I'm catching up with Hunter. And so I keep kept on going. And when I left the lunges, I was in second. And the thing that motivated me the most was that I noticed that none of them had noticed that I was already leaving. They were focusing on one another. Hunter with Dylan, with Magida, with Ronkovic. So I left in second. I knew that Hunter was almost finishing, and I gave it all out on the run because I knew that I'm not weak, but comparing to Hunter, I'm not that good on the wall balls. And my mindset was, I have to make 40 seconds at least. I have to have an advantage of 40 seconds. 40 seconds are 20 wall balls. So that when the third man arrives, I thought it would be Hunter, but it was Dylan. I have to drop the ball because I only wanted to do a 20 wall ball set in the first. And then when he picks up, I'll pick up, but I have the 21st. So I have a 20 wall ball advantage to manage during the 100. So I knew that if I do that, I'll be able to keep up the pace and manage the rests and be able to hold them off. But then came Ronkovic because I believe he came like in sixth. I was controlling more or less Dylan, Hunter, and then Magida, and then he came out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting that, but I gave my best. So even if I knew that he was there, I probably wouldn't be able to keep the second place.
Yeah.
And Ronkovic did 75 unbroken.
I think so. I think that's what I heard, is he did the first 75 unbroken. He's known for that. Like that's his thing, is he's just great at them. He's a powerful dude, and he's a great athlete. Like, but yeah, he went from sixth to second in the wall balls. So
yeah,
that's a pretty big move. That was like your move on the lunges. He just waited one more round.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was me. So you end up third. I mean, you were expecting maybe a top 10. What does this do for you, aside from a little bit of cash in the pocket and, you know, pay for the trip?
In Portugal, people don't really know this kind of sports and don't value them because, as an example, I have no sponsors, but also I'm not looking for them because I like to keep the pressure out. I like to do things on my own, not depending or relying on anyone. But, you know, I have a stable life. I have a good job. I have my CrossFit box. So I'm independent sports-wise. I can do the events, especially in Europe, that I want. But it would be nice for a guy like me to have some national help to go to, for example, if I can qualify to go to Las Vegas, because that's something that's really expensive for us here in Portugal. And I'd like to take also my family. So it's something that I can't do without leaving other things behind. But it doesn't make that much of a difference because I already, the IROC Spain owns also the concept in Portugal. So they already were talking to me to be an ambassador, to affiliate my gym, to go with them to Leipzig. So nothing has changed that dramatically, except that I have like 300 friend requests or following requests on Instagram, my Instagram account.
Well, one of them's mine.
So. One of them's mine. sorry.
So I would start hitting High Rocks up there for some plane tickets. That would be my deal. You know, you want me to represent Spain here? Let's get me some plane tickets.
Portugal.
Or yeah, nobody says Spain is taking over Portugal.
Yeah, right? Yeah. High Rocks Spain. Yes.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is there plans to come to North America for?
Yeah, for sure. You know that as I told you, I like to do sports. I like to do new things. Especially here in Portugal, I like to be the first to do the things. And when I do them, I like to be on the top of the sports. I always choose sports that I can be successful, but also that can be really a real challenge for me. I did that on Spartan Racing, and I'm doing it now. Last year, I did some swim runs, and also with a fellow, we won the first event that we went to. So I like to prepare myself before appearing and going all out on the first event and then doing it like for a year or two. So my goals now are more or less clear in IROCS. I want to go to Madrid in December. It will be the first event in Southern Europe. Obviously, I would love to win the event, but above all, I would like to break the 1 hour mark. It depends of the setup. It depends of a lot of things, but I believe I can break it because now I'm seeing some feedbacks, some recaps from some athletes, and most of them are focused on working on their weaknesses. Most of them say that they run out too hard, too hot. I'll be honest, I think I can take like 10 seconds on each run, and that can give me like 90 seconds 80 seconds on the event, and I think I can improve in every station. I've tried to do that in this last 3 or 4 months, and last weeks were not that favorable because of my rest time and my free time to train, but I almost achieved the goals that I wanted in terms of times, of times that I wanted to win in the workouts. In the running, I've never been a fast runner, especially a road runner, but I have a big margin to improve, not only for Madrid, but if I can keep motivated and especially without injuries, because I'm 39 years old, so I cannot train as crazy guy like Dylan with 24 or 25. I have to cool down.
Nobody trains like Dylan.
Yeah, nobody trains. But if I can keep up, I believe that I want to go to Las Vegas, and I want to do a good score there. Always thinking about improving, but I also know that a lot of new guys will come. Some of these guys that have been here have learned valuable lessons as I have. Most of them will be able to improve. But as I say, new guys, this is a sport that is attractive. This World Championship was really moving things on social media, especially here in Europe. So I think that a lot of OCR athletes that are very good will be showing up on the next events.
Yeah, and when you come over here, you could probably expect to see Ryan Kent and possibly Isaiah Vidal and guys like that too.
Cole Schwartz.
Well, Kent's one of the few who has broke that 60 mark, so.
I know him.
definitely a real threat, and he's looking fit now. I guess one other question I have is, because you have done so much Spartan, is Abu Dhabi something that's possibly in your future?
Yes. One of the problems with Spartan races for me, I'm from a hot country. I have no mountains. I have just some small 300 meters peaks here. I'm very good in uphill, but I'm very, when I go to altitudes, it's really complicated to me because I'm not used to that. When I went to the European Championships, all of them were in ski resorts. When I went to Lake Tahoe, I felt the altitude. The only European Championship where that didn't happen was in Scotland, near Edinburgh. And I got there after an injury, but the last weeks I could train well, and I did fifth or sixth there. It was my best ever European Championship because all of the top guys were there, like John Alban and Peter Zischka. And so the competition was fierce, but I did well in that event because I didn't felt the altitude effect. So last year, I believe when I heard that the World Championship was going to be in Abu Dhabi, I was really excited. Not just because of the lack of altitude, but especially because of the heat. Because most of the Spartan race top athletes live in the mountains. They are guys like Ryan Atkins, like BJ Jones, all of the guys that are in the United States in the altitude and in the mountains. Also in Europe, the Czechs, even the Spanish guys that are really, really good. They live in the Pyrenees, in the mountains. So it would be a very, very, very different event. And I believe that those two little big differences would play in favor of guys like me.
So there you go. Thiago says he's going to win the World Championships in Abu Dhabi. Pretty much guaranteed it. 100%. Honestly, that's all I got for Thiago. Bethany, you got anything else?
No, that's so good. Thanks so much, Thiago, for meeting us. It was really good to get to know a little bit about you. You very much impressed us in High Rocks, but it sounds like we've just missed seeing your name because you've definitely been out there crushing it. So we really look forward to seeing you out in the future.
Thank you.